Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, depending on what time you're listening. This is the Padres EVT Podcast, episode 176. As always, I'm your host, Clark Farenthal, and joined, as always, by the creator and founder of the East Village Times, James E. Clark. James, how are we doing this Friday? A tough Padres game we just witnessed, but how are we doing?
Doing well. I mean, it's 162 games. I know that games like today can take a toll on a fan, but you know, it was one of those games where, you know, runners in scoring position, a couple of breaks here and there, and the score could easily been flipped the other way. So that's the nature of baseball, though. I mean, the little things go a long way in the game. I always say that, and I think today pretty much proved that.
Yeah, I mean, today really felt like early on a game that San Diego could have built a much larger cushion for themselves, and they had the 2-1. You have a really unfortunate sort of situation where Fernando does a pop-up slide on a ball that Cronenworth definitely would have beat out, would have made it a 3-1 game. It just felt like it had other opportunities throughout the game where it was just like, God, if you can get one more hit, you make it a little bit more room. And it really hurts, too, because you waste what feels like a great start from Dylan Cease. Not feels like, was a great start from Dylan Cease.
Yeah. The middle to the bottom end of this lineup has to be more consistent. I mean, we're getting some hits from the bottom in Paulie and Merrill with the rookies chipping in, but it seems to be that 5, 6, 7 spot that's really kind of hurting this team right now. Kim is just not performing. You know, Camposano's hitting. It's just when you lose, it's the little things are magnified, and it's just runners in scoring position. It's Profar had a big out today with runners on. I mean, that's just how baseball is.
Definitely. You know, I think today we were 2-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Not great, not horrible, needs to be better. This was also, I believe I saw, the second time in which the Padres have lost a game this season where our opponent didn't have a hit with runner in scoring position. So the Giants didn't record one with a hit and runner in scoring position there, which again, I think just speaks to the Padres getting a really good pitching performance and the offense sort of just not providing anything on the backup end to, hoist him up. Because again, I realistically think, and I'm sure you would agree, that if you get 6 innings of one-run ball where your starting pitcher is going out there and getting 15 whiffs and being dominant, you should probably win that game. But San Diego has had a knack here, not just, I mean, it's obviously a bleed over from last season, but for these first 10 games and all of 2023, of finding ways to lose these ones. And it's just frustrating.
It is. I mean, De Los Santos goes in and hits the first batter and gives up the game essentially in two consecutive pitches or two at bats. I mean,
that's tough too. And I feel for De Los Santos. Obviously you wanted to perform there and the hit by pitch stinks. And then it's a bad pitch that just gets gapped. And it was a great relay. I'll give it Zokar and Kim.
I thought there was no shot off the bat. I thought that's the ball game. But they made it bang, bang at home. So,
no, that was textbook for the way that you want to draw it up. But I feel for him because, again, I think it is sort of almost like a last year tendency where you're asking the bullpen to be perfect. You're asking, and that's a really difficult thing to do to protect one run leads constantly. And I think this is already the 6th time this season where you only recorded 3 or less runs in a game. And that just speaks again just sort of the inconsistency that the offense has found this year, which is even more surprising when you look at, like, I would have felt if you would have told me Jake Cronenworth was hitting this well to start the season, the offense would be doing a much better spot. Right. But it's not.
Right. It's just hard to explain. The top four of the lineup are the nucleus of the team. And once you get past that, you just want to be able to turn the lineup around and get back to them. And they're just not able to. And, you know, Manny, you got to wonder how his arm's feeling, if his elbow's still a little sore. Maybe he needs a day off. Then again, can the Padres offense afford to give Manny a day off and then have, Igai Rosario in the lineup and just further complicate the doldrums that this team is going through right now offensively?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Manny, if everything was more complete on the roster, would certainly be due for a day off.
Yeah.
But I feel like right now, if you take Manny's bat out of the lineup, even just his presence there alone, it's been tough enough. It would become what felt like probably a dark hole there if you took him out. But again, it's tough because he does look like, he could use a day off, but I don't think it's something that they can afford to do right now under any circumstance.
No.
So.
No, I mean, like I say, the losses, things like this are magnified. I mean, if it was a 3-2 victory the other way, then we would be praising the clutch hit or this or Cease's performance and the bullpen capitalizing and shutting him down. It's baseball, and little things do mean a lot. Games can get flipped like that. Momentum can get flipped like that. And you know, when you have someone on the ropes and when you have the ability to score more runs and essentially put them away or put them farther away from you, you got to do it. And the Padres just don't seem to be able to do that right now. They're just kind of settling for what they get offensively, and that's it. And you got to have that killer instinct. You got to go out there and you got to perform and you got to do what's needed to get the job done.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, we've talked a decent little bit about Manny here, but there's also another name that we've talked about too, just ourselves, that's also really struggled himself too to this point. And that's Ha-Seong Kim in the five hole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I obviously, like a lot of fans, love Kim, and the defensive value has been great, but him in the five hole feels like just the wrong spot. I mean, I put out something earlier going back to August 15th. He has a 3% barrel rate, a 67 WRC plus, only 3 home runs and 214 plate appearances. The five spot is not where he should be. I think Kim, for what he is either a guy you stick at the very top of the lineup, because even in this drought where the power's gone, he's still almost an 11% walk rate. He's not chasing. Yeah. He's not whiffing. You can use that speed on base because he's a bag stealer to try to make something that's happened at the top of the lineup, or you move him further down to the 7 and 8 and you try to have him be some guy that's able to flip the lineup over. Basically almost be like a second leadoff, maybe in the 9 spot or in, you know, in the 8 spot and make stuff happen down there.
Yeah.
But his profile doesn't fit the 5 hole. And that's what they're trying to do right now. And it's hurting them at the moment. And I love Kim as much as the next guy, and his defense is fantastic, but the bat has been an issue, not just for these 10 games, but for the last month and a half of last season too. It was a trend.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, he's never going to be a huge offensive force. I mean, that's just, he wasn't heralded coming up in Korea growing up. He was not a high draft choice. He was not a top prospect, if you will, in Korea. He had to work very hard to attain what he's attained. Mm-hmm. He's not a toolsy kind of guy. He has tools, but I think the Padres need to realize what they have and who they have and try not to force a round peg into a square hole, if you will. Kim in the number five spot seems like he's pressing, seems like he's trying to drive the ball, seems like he's trying to just do too much. And like you say, he's still recording the walks, and maybe towards the top of the lineup, we'll put that in his mind that he needs to get on base and concentrate on shortening his swing, just putting it in play and just letting the game come to him. Right now, he just doesn't seem like he has it. And it's concerning when you recite numbers that are from last year to now. You know, this isn't just first 10 games he's struggling. This is something that's, you know, kind of holding over from last season. And this is a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah.
With a pretty big contract demand, I would imagine. So what are the Padres going to do?
You know, I think that's another aspect of this. I think a lot of people have started to talk about, again, I know it's just been 10 games, but this is a player who, as you pointed out, this is a contract year for him. He wants an extension from something. I mean, but realistically, as much as everyone loves him in San Diego, like, are you going to give him $200+ million if you know the bat is this, if this is what it's going to be?
You think he'll get $200 million? You think that's what his asking price is going to be?
So here's what my idea is basing off of it. I think he's a very similar profile, or at least could be, and has been, to Dansby Swanson. Defense first, shortstop. The bat can't have power because Kim's hit 20 home runs in a year. There's athleticism, base stealing ability. You're going to get consistency from him. And I think especially with the shortstop market being as premium as it is right now, someone's going to probably have to overpay a little bit for him. And I know people at the same time have sat there and said, oh, maybe he'll take a hometown discount in San Diego. As cool as that would be, and as awesome. I mean, but the reality is that
still not affordable.
It's like, this is your only free agent period you are going to get. You should actively look as a player, as an individual, for the most money that you can get out of this time.
For sure. For sure. He's going to capitalize. He's going to get rich. He's going to make a lot of money. Is that something the Padres can afford? Is that something that's a wise decision? I know the Ha-Seong Kim's chance rule all over Petco Park, but he's a crowd favorite. He's a fan favorite, but at some point, the spending has to stop with the offense and especially in the infield. I mean, you can't afford to pay $700 million to your four infielders. I mean, that's just not going to work.
No, it's a lot. And again, there's so much season left and he can get it right. And there are some numbers that maybe suggest, you know, some area for improvement. I do believe, if I remember correctly, he's one of the few bats that has an 85% contact rate and then just about a 10% barrel rate that also included Cronenworth and Merrill to start the season. But still, there's a lot of body of work that, you know, he's an average bat at this point. He's an average to maybe slightly above average bat to his career. And I know the defense is elite. It's top five at shortstop out
for
there
sure.
for my money. But defense is very important. It's not to say that it isn't, but I'm not going to give a guy who's defensive first, okay, bat second, an extension with a serious sum of cash behind it. I don't think we should be doing that. That just shouldn't happen.
And this is another right-handed hitter too. I mean, you already have Manny, you already have Tatis, you already have Bogarts committed long-term, and all right-handed hitters. I know Cronenworth has an extension in his left-handed bat, but it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. So at what point are you going to put him on the market? At what point do you put exploratory fields out there and see if what value you can get for him? And I don't know. You got to think that the fans are going to be upset over this, but it just doesn't, the way the team is structured right now, it just doesn't make sense to be able to entertain the idea of bringing him back. And you certainly don't want to let him leave at the end of the year and pick up a qualifying offer or whatever else you might potentially get for him.
Yeah. You know, again, it's a tough spot. I think Kim is more than capable of making a bounce back. He's been a good bat in the past, but right now, again, just to go back to the main point, him in the five hole just doesn't feel like the right spot. It doesn't suit him. It needs to be some sort of change. And I feel like the guy that you maybe want to consider more in there is someone like Campusano. I think Luis Campusano is the much more five hole hitter type of guy. And I think he's shown you that already at points this season.
Yeah. Until he cools down, you need to put him in a area of the lineup where he can drive in runs and the bat can be effective and potentially be useful. I mean, the way he's hitting right now, you just have to reinforce it and you just have to continue to let him hopefully progress. I mean, we all know that the Padres love to talk about his defense and how well that's progressing, but the bat is really starting to come around and be consistent. And that's something that is exciting for a catcher, you know, a position that's traditionally pretty weak offensively.
I definitely agree. So I just think when I look at Campusano too, in the opportunities he's had early on in the season, he's done a really good job of shortening up with two strikes, just putting balls in play, making productive outs. I think in a five hole spot, just someone who I feel like with runners in scoring position, he would just give us a better shot right now to execute. I think he's just a little bit better in that spot.
For sure. And you know, I think some people would even argue that he's probably one of the most valuable players on the team simply because if he went down, you'd be in a really tough spot. I mean, Higgy's is a career kind of backup, and then in the minors, there's really nothing down there that's close. I mean, Valenzuela's in Double A, but he's not necessarily close. Solis is a Fort Wayne, and you're definitely not going to go that route. So you have Chandler Siegel, you have other guys that are potentially fillers, but Camposano is a pretty valuable commodity.
No, I mean, again, because you're going to at that point where you're then really asking, like, all right, Higashioka, you got to take almost every day back there. And then you're calling up Brett Sullivan, who, you know, no disrespect to Sullivan, but that's not who you want to see those two guys be your battery every day. You feel certainly much worse about that at the moment than you do with Luis behind there.
Yep. I mean, let's face it, Camposano is just holding that spot until Salas is ready. And when the two of them are here, that is a terrific little platoon. I mean, you have a left-handed, right-handed complement each other. Salas is supposed to be a higher regarded defender. That's a great future, but you got to worry about now, I guess. I mean, again, this is just me just spitballing. Luis Camposano is very important to this team right now.
No, he's incredibly important. And, you know, I just think from an offensive standpoint, he gives the Padres something behind the plate offensively that they haven't had in a long time. I know the defense is still, I would like to call it a work in progress.
He's definitely better. There's you can't take that away from him.
Yeah.
But he was really, really bad before. So him being better is probably average to slightly above average. I know that the pitch dynamics, the framing and all that are high on him, but there's still little tiny details, blocking, pitch calling, little things that need to be worked out. And who's to say that he can't do that in time? I mean, he's obviously made the improvements, and kudos to him. I mean, Joe Musgrove didn't even want to throw to him at all at some point. And now he's touting him and hyping him up. So,
well, that's, I think, certainly one of the things I think about that shows the defensive improvement itself is that there were a number of guys on the staff not too long ago who, as you pointed out, was like, I don't want to throw to him. I don't feel comfortable with him back there. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't happened at all. And I think that's just shows the coachability of Luis, how Campy's been able to just evolve back there, get better. Again, not sitting here saying he's some sort of defensive guru, like, you know, Austin Hedges, or he's an, you know, one of those guys back there in terms of his frame rate, but the improvement is certainly noticeable. And when you have someone who's, you know, a near or possibly can get to above average catcher with the offensive upside that he has, he's incredibly valuable. And again, the five hole just feels like the spot he should be right now, especially when he's hot. Give him really a shot, see what happens. And I know Shildt probably feels like at the moment that I want to keep the lineup the same for the start of the season, maybe keep guys in similar spots. There's not so much movement, but it's something to consider here in the near future if Kim's struggles continue to persist.
Yeah,
that's all I feel like.
For sure. A lineup shakeup is going to have to happen at some point if they continue to perform like this. That's just plain and simple.
Yeah. I still think, you know, I know there's been a tendency of just for how today went, at least in my mind, like, oh, the bad things are going wrong. But there's still been some things from the offense that have been solid. Like, they're seventh in WOBA among major league teams right now, 352. That's a good sign. I think Merrill, I know the numbers haven't really correlated yet to a ton of raw data success, but the underlying numbers are fantastic. He's still barreling the ball. He's giving you good at-bats. And again, as we touched on, Cronenworth's been really good. I think Tatis has been really nice. Yeah. Bogaerts is showing a little bit more on the pop end. So there's still stuff to build on at the moment, but just some of the holes right now that San Diego has in that lineup are just big, and it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's just the reality of it. You take someone like Juan Soto out of the lineup, and there's going to be repercussions, and there are repercussions. This team is just, and even with Soto last year, there were issues still with the depth of this lineup, and it definitely didn't resolve itself in taking him out of the lineup. So I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it is what it is. There were veteran free agents who signed for $3, $4, $5 million a year who would have been a upgrade to what we're seeing right now. I don't know what the financials are right now. It seems like this team just doesn't want to spend any money. And I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's, I don't want to say it's concerning, because there's still a very hefty payroll and still very healthy, but I don't know. I really don't know. I don't have an answer for you. I know that they're hamstrung a little bit with the finances that they have committed, and those aren't easy things to get out of or work around. They weren't creative like the Dodgers and had deferred money. And quite frankly, I don't think they could have deferred money. That's just not a smart move for a small market team like the Padres are. And they really are still a small market team, no matter what.
Yeah, you know, I do think, like, again, it seems like after every loss that San Diego suffers, the name Tommy Pham gets floated up again. I'm starting to lose maybe a little bit of faith that that's actually ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Because
it would have happened already. They know who he is. They've had him in the locker room. He's interacted with these players before. You got to think that $3, $4, $5 million isn't the issue here. It's got to be something that they just don't think that's a good fit. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I can't. This is just me guessing. There's just no reason for him not to be on this roster at this point. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I'm the same way. I just feel like if there was a time to have signed him, they would have done it already. I mean, Profar and Zocar haven't been huge liabilities to this point. They're not the reason they're losing games, but in the long term, you're certainly going to want something, I'm sure, better, you know, more improved upon than those two. But if Pham's not here already, again, to your point, I just don't know what the holdup is. And
I mean, even if they signed him, you're looking at it 2-3 weeks where we're going to have to take that pass down in the spring training and the complex. And I mean, I don't know. is a trade going to help this team right now? Is messing with chemistry right now or this early in the clubhouse even worth the risk? I don't know. It seemed odd that this construction of this team didn't happen in February and March when we all expected it to do. And it kind of just, I thought, you know, players would just fall into their laps and it just, nothing ever came to fruition. I don't know.
No, I mean, you know, there's names out there in free agency still that could help. Part of me still thinks maybe the Preller's sitting there like, I might have a trade on the table. There's maybe a move there to be made. But,
well, this week, speculation came from the Marlins about Preller being very active, acquiring Luzardo and Arise. I mean, you could see that. But, I mean, at this point, Preller's probably had contact with every GM that will answer his call and has had some sort of formality with them. So, I mean, is this really breaking news? Is this, I mean...
No, on the topic of the trade with Miami, you know, I think Arise is a really interesting name. He's been brought up. I mean, we've been connected to him, I feel like, for at least a while now, dating back almost to last year, even the late part of it, especially with Miami starting so bad, it's again become sort of a possibility. I would really be intrigued by it because Arise at a baseline is probably one of the best pure hitters in baseball, if not the best pure hitter in baseball. Just bat to ball skills the game has seen in a long time. He would instantly help the lineup. He's played left field. I think he has over 100 innings out there. So, you know, he has experience. He's not a gold glover per se, but he knows how to play the spot. He would certainly help the lineup. My only thing would be, what do you got to give up for him? What do you have to toss their way?
Prospects. I mean, that's
prospects. Certainly. It's just, the names, what, like Lesko, would you be dealing? Sure. Like, are you willing to deal a Lesko or a Snelling for, I believe, 2 years of that time?
If Luzardo is included in that deal, who I like really, really well, and I think is probably better than Arise as far as value, then go for it. You're talking about unheralded, you're talking about prospects who could fizzle out, could never even reach the major leagues. I mean, I like Lesko a lot, but. They're prospects. Prospects are prospects.
I 100% agree. I think if there was a deal out there where it was Arise and Luzardo, as it has been reported, as much as I like a guy like Lesko, as much as I like a guy like Snelling, I think I would make that move. Because it's a point that we've talked about previously where, you know, prospects are prospects. It's a crapshoot, really, at some point. You don't know how they're always going to figure out, no matter how high the ceiling may seem for them. No. With Arias and Luzardo, Arias, obviously, as we touched on, one of the best hitters in baseball right now. Luzardo, a very dominant left-handed arm. I have loved Luzardo since his time in Oakland. I know he got shipped out of there because there were some issues, but my philosophy always is bet on stuff, and Luzardo's stuff is disgusting, and he's really put it together well in Miami. And to add him to the rotation, if you could make that happen, yes, I'm willing to give up a good chunk of prospects as long as they're not named Solace, DeVries, something of that nature. But Lesko or Snelling, sure.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, the San Diego Padres are not going to be able to revamp their whole lineup. That's just not going to happen. No. That's just not feasible. There's no trade that's going to bring in 3-4 players that's going to revamp this lineup. So they're going to need to go with the philosophy that pitching's going to win, bullpen's going to win, acquire a player like Luzardo. All of a sudden, King's your number 5. You should be winning most games when you hand the ball to the bullpen. And that's the philosophy that they're going to probably try to win with moving forward. And at this point, that's the only way you can do this. Cause like I say, you can't bring in DH. You're not going to find a left field upgrade. You're not going to find someone who can platoon with Merrill against tough lefties. You're not going to find someone to play third base when Manny's hurt. It's just not, you're just not, there's not this early, maybe in July, but if you wait that long, July might be, they might be out of the race by then. It might be sellers. I mean,
we might not be buyers. We might be looking at the sellers market, seeing what we can get for certain guys. So I agree. So, you know,
it's trouble. It is troubling. Especially when I see a report from, I don't know, was it Ken Rosenthal or somebody that wrote something that the Padres were in talks with Juan Soto, maybe not necessarily with AJ Preller involved, but more like Seidler and Boris. And he even said that, you know, if unfortunately Seidler didn't die, that they might have actually gotten something done. And that breaks my heart, man, because, you know, I know people are Juan Soto, but Juan Soto and Tatis in the middle of your lineup is something that you can build on for forever. I mean, that ship has sailed. But when I see something like that, it's just like, God, we're San Diegans. Why can we not have nice things? Why is there always something that just throws a monkey wrench in the plans?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, to this season especially, the way that Tatis has started, I mean, this looks like the Tatis we saw when we first broke in. He's looked fantastic at the plate. And just to think how Soto has started, which has been really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it make me reminisce a little bit and said, it would have been really fun, but that ship has sailed.
Yeah, it has sailed. And
I know some Padres fans have some sort of feeling of, you know, grandeur, like, oh, maybe we could get him back in free agency. That's never going to happen. That won't be happening, as much as I wish it would. Soto's days or any way of retaining him in free agency will not be happening, unfortunately. So, yeah, it is a little bit hard with the way that both of them started to think, oh, what would it be like if Soto was hitting two hole right now? But, you know, that's sort of how the cookie.
Yeah, we're moving backwards. I'm sorry. I even brought up.
No, it's fine. It's totally
it's something in the news that kind of just irks me even more as a San Diegan, as a San Diego sports fan. It's just like, man, why is there always something that it's mind blowing. It really is. I mean, it is. It's early though. The season is early. There's no reason to give up any hope. But
I agree.
We're just trying to figure things out, if you will.
Yeah. Again, I think the big thing, and I have to remind myself too, is this. It is just 10 games. As tough as some of these games and losses have been, 10 games doesn't necessarily define your season by any stretch of the mean.
No,
it's just one chunk. And if they turn it on and they get it right, I know we said that so many times last season, then you forget about this stretch. But it's just not the way that I think a lot of people hope it would be. And it just has, at times, such a similar feel to last season. So hopefully they're able to knock it off. And things get going back in the right direction. But I did want to switch a little bit of our, you know, what we've been talking about from the professional, the major league side, down to an opportunity me and James had this past week to go out to the Lake Elsinore Storms Stadium for their media day and had the opportunity to interview some of their players, including first round pick Dylan Head. Very cool to speak to him. Carson Montgomery, Austin Vaught. And then we also had Isaiah Lowe. So it was really cool to get to talk to them. I know for me, I very much enjoyed it. I think James certainly did the same time. And it was cool to hear from some of these young guys, you know, who are going in maybe for some of their first professional season, just to see how things are going. And for a guy like Head to hear from him and just, you know, hear his head coach rave about the development they see for him this season and how they feel like his ceiling is so extremely high. It was just sort of it was a cool thing to see and a cool thing to hear from them. So I wanted to ask you first, from what, you know, you heard from them, what were some of the big takeaways that you had from that sort of time we have with the players?
Well, you know, the Lake Elsinore team has a lot of returners from last season, and they had a pretty productive year. They finished around 500. I think they're a little above 500, just missing the playoffs. But there's a lot of encouragement from that team, I would say. A new coaching staff with Lucas Ray bringing over Eric Del Prado and their pitching coach from the AZL Complex League. Young coaching staff, young players. There's excitement with that team. And I think Dylan Head is one of those prized jewels in the Padres farm system that just has like unbelievable amount of talent that just, I think the Padre fans are going to enjoy seeing him in Lake Elsinore. I wouldn't imagine they'll promote him anytime soon, but you never know. It's exciting to see the farm system continue to just produce players that have value. And if this team wants to continue to win, the farm system's going to have to continue to just develop. And it's really a great time to be a Padre fan, no matter.
Definitely. And I think with talking to Head and getting some of his thoughts, it was, I mean, again, he's, because an athlete perspective, he's so explosive. The speed, when you watch it up close, is obviously the first thing that jumps out. But the bat to ball skills, when we watch it too, I think for a guy who's just coming out of high school, it's really solid. And I think he's only going to continue to grow and do it more. And I know it's just doubles and gaps, you know, gap to gap right now. But I mean, you look at him, I feel like he's a guy that you can fill out. He'll get bigger. That power's going to come more with time. And sort of all the tools that he has in his bag, it feels like, and especially from what we've heard from the coaching staff, it looks like a player who, yeah, that can be an impact major league outfielder for you, you know, sooner rather than later. I think the upside on him is incredibly high. And I know coaches are, obviously they're going to support their players no matter what, but to hear the raving that we got, I mean, it sounds like they're super excited from him, and there's just so much to his game that draws eyes, and I'm just excited to see what he does in this first season.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of eyes on him for sure. He's definitely the prospect to look at on that team, the prospect to monitor, if you will, the ones that the scouts are going to come over, the ones that the evaluators are going to come over and watch. But, you know, there's some interesting arms too. We talked to both Lowe and Montgomery. Both of those are, you know, two out of three in the starting rotation to begin the season. There's a lot of intrigue with both of those pitchers. You know, you wrote a piece on Lowe. We had a chance to talk to him. He's a real personal guy, you know, kind of quiet, kind of shy a little bit, but you can see the confidence in his eyes. You can feel it, that he wants to come out this season. He wants to really dominate. And I just hope he gets the opportunity with the shoulder issues to just progress and get better and show what he's capable of doing.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, it was fun to hear from him, you know, some of the goals that he had for this season, talking about wanting to continue to build that velocity. And the thing that to me is so intriguing, and that is why I want him to stay healthy so bad, is I do think that three pitch mix that he has is so good, and it's still so raw. But at the same time, in his limited time starting, he threw strikes. And if he has that ability to pound the zone with, you know, really plus fastball with great movement, you know, great movement vertically, a great vertical dip and horizontal movement on a slider, a good changeup as a third pitch. Man, that can be really something. And again, too, it was cool to hear him talk about how when he's throwing live batting practice, when he had faced some of his teammates, that again, he's not super tall. He's not this really tall guy, but his arms, you could even just tell, were really long. The extension that he gets off the mound, guys were saying to him that balls were getting on them quicker. And for a guy who already throws 96, can get to 90, and if he's keep putting up on the velocity with that extension, man.
And the
that
command
could be really something special. Yeah. I mean, he's got, to me, again, I'm very high on him. He's my breakup prospect for this year for the San Diego farm system. But to me, he just has fast riser written all over him. And I think if he can go out there and execute and stay healthy, he can be electric for this team.
Yeah. And he's got the body of a pitcher, the stout body, stout bottom half. Big legs. He's going to throw. He's going to be able to repeat his motion and do it, you know, pitch after pitch and be the dominant self. Like you mentioned, the command and the ability to pour in that fastball is wonderful, because you typically see a guy hitting the high 90s and command is the number one issue with them. And it doesn't seem to be the problem with him, which is wonderful. So, you know, that's high ceiling. That's excitement. And Montgomery's another one who's, you know, is potentially can hit the high 90s, you know, mixes the ball around a little bit more, but he had a real interesting talk with us and seemed like he really starting to get it. He seems like he really knows what he wants to do when he's facing someone, and that's valuable information. And the stash was awesome that he had too.
No, yeah. I mean, the mustache was great. You know, I just think, again, when you look at him and what he at Florida State, was so interesting, because in 2020, he was inside the top 50 for prep on like prospects to get drafted. He opted to go to college, which I think no matter how the college thing went, that was the right move for how many prospects have struggled out of that 2020 class. And walks were an issue. His last season at Florida State maybe didn't go according to plan. I think he had like a 16% walk rate, but the stuff is still there. The fastball got hit around, but when you can hit 96, 97, that's good. He's a big guy, big frame. The slider's good. You know, I thought it was interesting. He talked about adding a cutter. They called like a correction pitch. I think that's good to have in there, but what I really found insightful from him was regarding talking about his fastball. He talked about, you know, wanting to kind of get more depth with it, using to pitch more up in the zone, lower in the zone. I think really just kind of incorporating some more movement on that pitch. And to your point too, I thought he had an interesting quote where he said, you know, college baseball, the competitiveness is awesome. And it's odd, you know, but it's all about winning. But since he's gotten to the Padres organization, it's all been about development. And I think he's really latched onto that, which for a young player like him is really encouraging to hear and see, because that's someone who I feel like in my mind is, you know, they're willing to put in the work. They're willing to put in the extra grind. And I think that's just a really cool quote to hear. And I thought it was interesting, too. He's talked about, because you asked a question about how they changed anything mechanically, and he talked about loosening his hips, you know, just using more functional movement, which I think, again, can just translate better overall for pitching, either just being longevity and health or maybe just adding some extra velocity, you know, mechanically to it. So
for sure. Yeah. He wanted to work on his limberness or his range of motion is what he described to us, being more fluent, if you will, in his mechanics and stuff. So, you know, you want to see that. You want to see these guys come in and ask these professional coaches, hey, how can I get better? What can I do to get to that next level? And implementing them is going to be wonderful. I mean, this is an older prospect too. This is a guy who's already been in college, who should progress with a couple good starts. I would expect to see him at Fort Wayne, and so they can challenge him and see what the next thing, what the next level has for him. So keep an eye on Montgomery, because I think that's another potential pitcher who could emerge this season out of nowhere virtually.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, as someone who likes just the raw stuff for prospects, he has it. I mean, he's a big 6'3 guy, and the stuff is there. If he can just figure out the command, if he can get a better shape on the fastball, there's a lot there to untap still, I think, in that arm and everything that he brings there. So I agree. I think he's a really interesting arm. It should be fun to watch him in the rotation. But he's also a guy, I think, too, he stated himself, like, I can do rotation. I'm comfortable coming out of the bullpen, too. I think he did that at Florida State as well. So he gives you options, and I think he has a big plus side. So it was cool to talk to him as well.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting to definitely kind of learn about these guys. And, you know, even though it was the interview was in a media scrum, you didn't get that personal connection with them that you kind of like to see. But you're still able to kind of get the gist of who they are and what kind of player they want to be. Nick Vogt was pretty impressive to me. That's someone who I wasn't really necessarily too familiar with, kind of learned about him. But I love the way he talked. I love that he recognized that he needed adjustments. He recognized that his opportunities are now. This is another guy who's out of college. You know, his opportunity is right here, right now. This is not a guy who's going to be able to toil through 2024 and potentially make an impact in 25, 26. This is a guy who needs to do something now. I don't know. I'd really like to talk to him more and see what motivates him, but I was impressed with his demeanor and with his just lust for becoming a better ball player, if you will.
No, I agree. I think, as you pointed out, his answers to our questions and stuff were really impressive. And again, just one of those guys for who just really seemed receptive, wanting to be able to change, simplify things. He talked about how last season he kind of went through, you know, almost like five different approaches, five different ways of, you know, going about it. And I think hearing him talking about just the idea of simplifying his game and really coming into something that just feels right. It's a good thing to hear. And I mean, obviously I have family who went to UCSB. So obviously I want to see Austin succeed as a, someone who is a UCSB alum. So, you know, I agree with you. I think he's someone who's, you know, recognized that the time is now, his opportunity is now, and I'll be excited to watch him go out there and execute. So hopefully for him, it'll be a big season too.
Yeah, for sure. It's an interesting ball club. And, you know, we had the opportunity to talk to Lucas Ray as well, the manager, the first year manager's first year in professional baseball, full season. He had an aura about him that was interesting as well. You could sense that he's very passionate about the job and very passionate about these young players. So I'm excited to see what he can do with these guys.
No, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was a really good hire in the sense that, you know, he dealt with a lot of these guys, either rookie ball or at the Padres, you know, rookie complex. And for a lot of these guys, if maybe it's their first stop at single A, or maybe this is their first year professional ball, to have someone around who's very, you know, familiar with them, that they're very comfortable with, I think it helps build a very inviting and quality environment at a single A level. And it's your point. You know, he had this sort of like infectious personality to him where, you know, he was very confident in how he was spoken. He was very confident in his guys. And again, for trying to develop players, having someone like that, I think is invaluable. I think he seems like an excellent choice to be their coach for this season.
Yeah, for sure. He seemed like it. And we tried to get some DeVere's information out of him, and he wasn't having that.
He was keeping it pretty tight on that for right now. You know, but
I'm sure he's excited to see Leo Dallas DeVere's eventually make his way up to Lake Elsinore. And that is something that you Padre fans should definitely check out once he arrives in Lake Elsinore. That's going to be a young player who has a really, really amazing ceiling. So we'll have to wait and hope that he is able to just live up to the hype. But I at this point, I wouldn't imagine he's, you know, when you see a player like that at that age, you get a little concerned, but I don't want to say guaranteed, but that's almost like a guaranteed major leaguer, you know.
Well, it feels hard. Not well. I mean, again, I think he's already in multiple. I know he's already in multiple top 100 prospects.
Yeah, he just
at age 17. But you know, you're already seeing him when they brought him up and gave him a couple at bats in those exhibition games against the Mariners. And those were a couple fringe either major league arms or major league arms, and he didn't look uncomfortable. He didn't look like he was overmatched.
No,
he looked like he went up there, did his thing. You know, looked like he was more than capable already. Obviously, there's going to need some marination time, no matter what. But I know what you're saying. It's he feels almost like that guaranteed guy. Like, yeah, you're going to see him in 2 years, and yeah, he'll be an impact guy. Hopefully, that's the case. But everything that you've seen from him so far, it checks every box that you would want to see.
Yeah, and you know, there's always the Luis Almanzar's out there. Padre fans are quite familiar with him. You know, can't miss prospect from the 2016-17 international class, the hyped international class. That was the prized hitter that was drafted by the Padres and signed for, I didn't even know what he signed for, $4.5 million or something like that. Never made it past single A. It happens. It happens. There's teenagers, prospects that are hyped, and until you're actually out there and performing against peers and players who are better than you when you're a young player, it can be a mental challenge for them to even advance at all. And some of them just kind of just wither away and blow away in the wind. And I don't think that's any chance that player, but you know, you do have a little bit of caution that you got to exercise.
Well, you know, I mean, again, it's just young players and prospects. Yeah. There's always a certainty, as we've talked about, where you feel really confident, but there always can be wacky things that happen. Guys just don't pan out. You know, something with their swing happens, maybe, you know, in between the years, they start thinking too much and the game goes, but I don't think anything's going to happen like that to DeVries. I'm certainly very confident of that at this point.
For sure.
Knock on wood, maybe, but
knock on wood is right. Yeah.
But even still, feel great about him. And again, from our time down in Lake Elsinore, from the prospects that we talked to, it feels like they have a good core down there and some exciting guys to watch, certainly for the start of this season. So
it's going to be exciting. I would definitely recommend Padre fans to come out there and check out the Lake Elsinore Storm and see what kind of talent we got coming up through the A ball system.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully someday it gets up to the Padres big league club soon and start helping them, so we don't lose games like today anymore.
I mean, all I can tell people is that Jackson Merrill and Graham Pauly were both playing in Lake Elsinore last season.
Yeah,
I mean,
guys jump quick, and we know probably loves to move these guys up quick now. And I think it's sort of prospect progression has moved certainly faster than it did 10 years ago. Move up quick. It's becoming much more rapid. And I think the Padres are one of those teams that where they feel like, I mean, as you pointed out, Merrill, Pauly, Solis, even last year, if you are having success, they are going to push you to the next spot. So Lowe, if Head, if Montgomery, if they're having success early, don't be shocked if you see them in Fort Wayne. Don't be shocked if you see them get pushed up. It happens.
It is. It's amazing how quickly they progress these prospects. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when a 26, 27-year-old prospect was considered a young prospect, and that's not even a case anymore. It's like, where the hell have you been? You're old. What are you? You know, it's pretty crazy when you see teenagers in the major leagues and performing.
I mean, I just think, you know, it's way back now, and obviously he's retired, but, you know, San Diego State legend. When Steven Strasburg progressed so quick, people were like, oh my gosh, look how he's flying through. And he did still, to a modern era, go very quickly, but it feels like more guys make that, you know, one-year jump now than it was 10 years ago. So I would not be shocked if a lot of these names we've discussed in a year or two's time are either knocking at the door, or they're like Pauly and Merrill, and they're saying, hey, we're going to perform in spring training. We're going to make sure there's no way you keep us off the roster.
The Padres have done a really good job in the last 5-10 years of cultivating the farm system. I mean, there's former Padre prospects sprinkled everywhere. I mean, Milwaukee has a ton. Pittsburgh has a ton. Seattle has a ton. Cleveland has a ton. And they're starting to make their mark in the major leagues, which is exciting when you see like a Gabriel Arias or Ty France or players of that ilk just performing. It's exciting because for years and upon years, Padre prospects didn't amount to anything. Even on the team, on anywhere else, they didn't do anything. The Padres drafted
I'll forgive you
I mean, Kevin Nicholson. I mean, they drafted some just absolute garbage. Like, just Matt Bush. I mean,
I believe if I read correctly from Baseball America on opening day, the Padres had the second most draftees on major league rosters on opening day, only behind the Dodgers.
And that's big shoes to fill, because the Dodgers seem to just, I mean, Yordan Alvarez was a Dodger at one point. I mean, they just seem to have so many damn talented players that just they ship them off when they're 16, 17, and 18 on these trades to just revamp it. Oh, and that's a great philosophy to have. And the Padres are consistently starting to do that. We talked about DeVere's and Salas. Those are 17-year-old kids that are phenoms. And it's still a great time to be a Padre fan, because they have these bullets to spend. They have these young players still coming up. This isn't just a, we got to win now or this is it. I mean, there's a future for this team. I know that it can be a little frustrating that they didn't win last year. They didn't really compete, and the season's been slow, but hang in there, Padre fans. If you have any issues, go out there and talk to someone over 40, 45, 50, and they will educate you on how spoiled you are.
I can certainly remember my own days back in the 2010s, or some dark nights where you're like, man, why am I staying up here watching this team? So I do always remember that. No matter what this season, if they're good or bad, the Padres at the very least will be an interesting team. And hopefully they're watchable.
They're entertaining. They're entertaining. That's why Petco Park sells out. It's not because it's Beer Fest every night, which, I mean, that does have a lot to do with it, but they're entertaining. You have players that the average person off the street knows. The average person who doesn't know shit about baseball knows who Manny Machado is, knows who Fernando Tatis Jr. is. They never had that before. Will Venable and Chris D'Onofrio didn't exactly bring in the media attention around the world like Machado and Tatis.
No, they did not. Although I missed a good old Will Venable diving catch in center field, or a little inside slider parked right field. I know exactly what you mean.
For both those guys right now, in the peak of their careers, Venable and D'Onofrio would be awesome on this team. That's exactly what this team needs, is role players like that who just go out there and perform and put out numbers and put their head down and grind. That's exactly what this team needs right now. Established major leaguers, not young players, but we have what we have, so we'll just have to make the best of it.
We do have what we have, and hopefully for these final two games of this weekend, Padres are able to go ahead and salvage the last two against San Francisco, get things moving right direction with a series win. But that feels like a good point for us to wrap up tonight. So for the East Village Times, EBT Padres Podcast, I'm Clark Farenthal. As always, my co-host, James E. Clark, joining me. Thank you all for listening. Have a good morning, good afternoon, or good night from where you're listening on. And we'll be back more than soon enough for y'all. Go Padres.